Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very rare second of the week edition of the TBH Sports Podcast. I am your host, Tyler Henry. The NFL season is in the books, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are your Super Bowl champs. I had a chance earlier this week to break down the game and some of the narratives that came out of it with Alex Weiner and Jordan Foote. So if you haven't checked that out already, it's up on all of our streaming platforms. Feel free to go take a listen. With the NFL offseason finally here and the MLB and Formula One season still 50-plus days away, it's time to turn our attention to the hardwood and the NBA. And while I have become a big fan of the league over the last 3-4 years, four jobs and a weekly football pod have prevented me from watching many games this season, leaving me, like I'm sure many of you, with a lot of questions about how we got to this point in the NBA season. Fortunately, there are those with a mind for basketball who have watched a ton of 2020-2021 action, and here to help us catch up on the NBA season is one such person. My guest today is Eric Ruby, host of the ISO Show and head of the Wave ASU, but more importantly, one of the smartest basketball guys I know and a former co-host on Bottom of the Sixth. Eric, it is great to have you back on the show. So good to have you here.
Man, you know, sometimes I just like to sit back and just listen to you talk, Tyler. I mean, it is truly a thing of beauty. I mean, set up perfectly, maybe complimented me a little bit too much. I don't know. I don't want to get the people's expectations too high. You're probably going to get some bad takes in here as well, but definitely going to be talking about basketball. We will cover that for you, Tyler. I got you.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, one thing we do always know, if I need some basketball takes, I can always come to you and Von Jones for those. And we've got a lot to talk about. So, again, I do like the NBA now. That is something that has come about in the last 3 or 4 years. Definitely didn't when I got into college. You guys changed my mind. And, you know, I like the league. I'm to a point now where I feel like I have a pretty good handle on it, but I just haven't had a chance to watch a lot of basketball. So what I wanted to do here, Eric, I want to go through all 30 NBA teams. We'll start in the Eastern Conference at the bottom, work our way to the top, then we'll head over to the Western Conference and do the same thing. And what I want to do here is just, I want to ask you one question about each of these NBA teams, and I want you to the best of your ability, just kind of give me as basic of an answer as you can to try to help me and everyone else who might be in my spot kind of catch up on what's been going on in the league this year. So we start, unfortunately, with the 6-18 Detroit Pistons. There are a few things that I kind of want to know about this franchise, but I think the biggest one for me right now, look, the Blake Griffin signing was kind of head-scratching at the time. It seems like almost every decision that this franchise has made since then has been bad. What the hell have the Pistons been doing over the last 2 or 3 years?
You know, it's a good question, Tyler. I'd like to say they've just been around, you know, been some playoff appearances as an 8 seed. It's been pretty bad in Detroit. And their offseason moves were head-scratching, to say the least. But they do have a couple bright points, one of those being Jeremy Grant, who left Denver for Detroit. I mean, they offered them the same money. He's been absolutely incredible, averaging a career high in basically every category pretty efficiently as well. He's kind of their bright spot there. It's just not working out. It's funny because they're 6-18, but their 6 wins have all come over like really good teams, the Lakers, the Suns, like the Celtics. It's weird in Detroit. It doesn't make sense. It's pretty sad, but they do have some bright pieces, some young guys. That's about it. I mean, they're not fun to watch on a game-to-game basis, but they've got a couple pieces that, I guess, if you're a Detroit fan, you could be like, oh, maybe those things work out for me.
Sure, I think that's fair. And also, I don't want to waste too much time talking about the teams here at the bottom, so I'll go ahead and just move on to the Washington Wizards, who are 6-15 here. As we kind of get to some of the better teams, we'll have a little bit more conversation about them. But Washington, 6-15, look, you add Russell Westbrook for John Wall, clearly things are not working out right now. The team still can't play any defense. Is it time, in your opinion, and I feel like everyone thinks this, I feel like this is not even a question that needs to be asked, but is it time for Washington to deal Bradley Beal, blow it up, and just try to start from scratch?
I mean, yes, but also no. Because with all of this going on, throughout all of this, and who knows if it's a charade, but Bradley Beal has still been like, yes, I want to be here. He just signed a max extension to be in Washington, and it's really rare to be a franchise and to get that level of commitment from somebody at high of a level as Bradley Beal. So they're kind of in a pickle because Bradley Beal's like, hey, I do want to stay here, but it's obvious that he's not happy losing. Russell Westbrook has been injured, inconsistent. He is not a good running mate. The roster around them is not amazing. They just gave a bunch of money to Davis Bertans, who has not been having as great a season as he did last year. Like, there's not a ton going on for that franchise except for Bradley Beal. And I kind of feel like they're going to hold on to him because it's pretty rare for a team this bad to have somebody that good, especially if he wants to be there. But if it's a charade, if what he's saying and what he's doing is just kind of a front to keep his image floating in the league, then it's ripping the Band-Aid off time. It's sooner rather than later. Bradley Beal's value will probably never be higher than it is right now. There are so many teams that could use a creator, could use a scorer like Bradley Beal. We've seen huge superstar trades basically go down all the time. There's no such thing as an untradeable contract. Like, it is time, if they didn't have this public commitment from Bradley Beal or this behind doors commitment from Bradley Beal. So if that is not what it appears to be, then you need to move on. There's no need to drag it on. But if you have his commitment, I say roll with it, man. Like, what else are you going to do? You're the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, and beyond that, they really don't have much. You mentioned Westbrook has been nothing but a disappointment this season. There's not a lot else going on this Washington team. So, again, it'll be interesting to see whether they hold on to Bradley Beal, whether they deal him. Obviously, he could be a huge piece for a team looking to make a run this postseason. But let's continue trudging through these teams that are not very good this year. We move on to the 9-16 Orlando Magic. My question here for the Magic, look, this is not a team that I felt like I had a great handle on, even last year come playoff time. This is probably the playoff team from last season that I knew the least about. But what I did know was they were good enough to make it. I believe they were even the 7th seed in the East. Now, they're in the 3rd to worst spot in that Eastern Conference. What happened to the Wizard or to the Magic? Or was it just a matter of the rest of the Eastern Conference kind of catching up to them with some good draft picks here?
Well, from the Wizards to the Magic, unfortunately, neither of them could perform any spell to stop them from dropping to the bottom of the East.
Gosh dang it.
But here's the thing. With Orlando, at the beginning of the season, they were doing fine. Last year, they made the playoffs. Like, they're not a terrible team. They've just been destroyed. I was looking for the wrong word. They are just getting destroyed by injuries. It's bad. Jonathan Isaac, Markel Fultz, like, those are two young stars for them. The two pieces that, like, were in their starting lineup were going to make a big impact. Injured. That really takes the wind out of your sails when the rest of your roster is Nikola Vucevic is going to go down as the all-time leading scorer in Magic history, probably the best player that they had career-wise, obviously not peak-wise, but career-wise, he could be there. It's sad. They could be a lot better. I think they could be a play-in team if everybody was fully healthy, but the story for Orlando this year has been injuries, and hopefully next year they can move on from that.
Sure, and these are the things that, again, me having not watched a single Orlando Magic basketball game this year would not have known. So thank you for helping fill in the blanks here. Was not aware that the injuries were the big thing. I'm sure I could have looked it up if I wanted to, but again, I kind of like having somebody, you know, be informative here, which is
why look it up when you can have me talk about it.
Yeah, why look it up when I've got Eric Rubio on speed dial. All right, let's move on to the team in the NBA that I know the least about, the Chicago Bulls. So my roommate Matthias Weilman, who is the host of Second Floor Sports. Him and I were talking the other day. I kind of explained to him that I didn't know a lot about the NBA coming into college. I know a lot more now. And he ran through we ran through every single team in the NBA, and it was like, try to get two players on every team. I got two players on almost every team. The one exception was the Chicago Bulls. I could not name one Chicago Bull player heading into that little conversation that we had. So I don't even have a question here. Just tell me anything you feel like I need to know about the Chicago Bulls.
Wow. That is actually surprising. Okay, things you need to know about the Chicago Bulls. Zach LaVine's a bucket, 27.4 points per game. He's somebody that I could see leading the league in scoring one day once he maybe has a better system around him, or maybe has a worse system around him and just can jack up as many shots as possible. They've also been hit with the injury bug, especially with their young big guys. Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. are both out right now. Before they went out, they were playing pretty well, especially Markkanen averaging almost 20 points per game. He was somebody who seemed a little bit lost in the NBA for his first couple of years. Now he's starting to find his footing a little bit more in Chicago. Kobe White, the draft pick last year, averaging 15 points per game alongside LaVine. They've got some young guys. They drafted Patrick Williams, number 4 overall. He's looked okay. They hired Billy Donovan to, you know, actually have a real coach. they're moving forward. They're not in a great position. They're in kind of that weird limbo spot that rebuilding teams find them. They've been rumored to maybe make a move for somebody like Lonzo Ball to go alongside Zach LaVine. They definitely need a passer that is like a controlled point guard who can pass and run the offense is kind of what they need next to LaVine. They don't have that yet. Once they have that, maybe a couple more veterans, you could see this team vie for a playoff spot. But until then, it's just going to be a lot of empty buckets between LaVine, Markkanen, and Coby White. They're fun to watch sometimes, but not all the time. You're not missing too much.
All right, fair enough. Let's keep the train moving here. The Cleveland Cavaliers, 10-15. I know at one point this year, Cleveland was at 500. They jumped out to a pretty good start. And look, we do know about some of the pieces on this team. We do know about some of the guys that have been around this franchise for a very long time. I want to talk about a guy that has not necessarily been around for as long. One of my all-time favorite, not just NBA performances, but basketball performances, came in a college game between Alabama and I believe it was Iowa. It may have been somebody else. I don't remember who they were playing against. Colin Sexton went 3-on-5 for about 12 minutes and damn near brought his team back to a victory in that game. I have always loved watching Colin Sexton do things. We saw him do some big things earlier this season. My question for you about the Cleveland Cavaliers and specifically about Colin Sexton, is he the real deal and where do you feel like his ceiling lies if he plays up to his potential in the league?
Also one of my favorite basketball moments of all time, Tyler. I even remember getting the notifications about that, like physically remember them popping up on my iPhone. He's really good, like really, really, really good. He is an absolute bucket. I like Colin Sexton a lot. He's like the only person I've ever seen score on Mikal Bridges so easily. It's crazy. He's smooth, he's quick, he's got a shot, a handle. And, you know, this Cleveland roster, it's pretty fun to watch. They've got a lot of weird pieces. They have a ton of centers, a ton of big men. But they also have some fun guards. Darius Garland, obviously, the Sexland backcourt, not only a great backcourt, but a great nickname. They're fun, and Colin Sexton is really good. It's not their year this year. They're probably going to move on from Drummond. They probably need to move on from Kevin Love, maybe even trade JaVale McGee, get rid of all their centers. Heck, but they traded for Jared Allen, drafted Isaac Okoro to play that 3 spot in the draft. So they kind of have their 1 through 3 and then their 5 figured out for the future. And it's fun to see it kind of come together. So, like, they're fine. They're good. They have some hope, which is something that Cleveland definitely needed. I think Sexton's going to be really good. I don't know if he's going to be, like, best player on a second round playoff team good, but he could be the best player on an 8 or 7 seed and then probably the second or third best player for a team that goes deeper in the playoffs.
All right, fair enough. Moving from a team that has not been in the postseason in quite some time to a team that was there last year in the NBA Finals, the 10-14 Miami Heat. Now, look, the playoff teams from last year, I do have a pretty good handle on. These are teams that I've followed and that I've continued to follow a little bit this year. I do know there have been some injury issues here. I know Jimmy Butler certainly has not been at 100%. I know that there have been some key pieces that have missed some time on the floor, but overall, similar system, similar roster. What the hell has happened to Miami? Has it just been the injuries, or have there been other factors at play that currently have them out of the Eastern Conference playoffs?
You know, usually I like to say, you can't blame it all on injuries or COVID protocols because everybody's going through that. But it's no secret. They've been absolutely decimated. Not only Jimmy Butler, but Tyler Hero. Like, those are two really important guys for their offense. In their absence, Bam has been incredible. He's probably the most athletic person in the NBA. And if he's not, he's top 2, top 3. It really is. 10-14, they're way better than that. I think they'll probably end up around the 6-seed area, somewhere around Indiana, who I think is also coming back down to earth a little bit more since that Oladipo trade. So I think they're better than where they are. Jimmy Butler's just coming back. He's getting into his groove. He is a really good player. They're not 10-14 bad. They should be able to avoid the play-in tournament this year. If they don't, it's not the end of the world, but they're definitely not as good as they were in the bubble. And I don't know if that's really necessarily an insult to them, but kind of more of a compliment to how well they played together in the bubble.
Sure, I think that's more than fair. They were the perfect bubble team. I read a couple of articles about how, again, just the style of the team, the way that they meshed in the bubble was fantastic, perfect. It got them to the NBA Finals. Of course, they came up just short against the Lakers. But, you know, they were one of those teams that you really did ask yourself if they were going to be able to replicate that success in a normal season. And so far, again, the injuries have been a massive part of it, but they just haven't quite had that same camaraderie among the team. Moving on to the last team that is sitting just outside of the playoffs. This is one that I had to do a quadruple take at. The 11-15 New York Knicks. Eric, my question for you here is very simple. Aren't the Knicks supposed to be bad at basketball?
Yes. And what if I told you, Tyler, that the Knicks are doing the worst thing possible by not being bad?
Oh, absolutely. I fully buy
that. They're being bad.
Yes.
By not being bad.
They're being bad by being good.
Tom Thibodeau was brought in for a reason. They wanted to win games this year. You don't bring in Tom Thibodeau to go from good to great. You bring him in to go from bad to good. Sorry, bad to mediocre. Let's not throw the good label on New York. Bad to better, maybe. It's that initial step to become respectable. They have a lot of veterans in there to go along with their young pieces. But the big problem in New York right now is that a lot of the fans are like, hey, why are we playing all of these veterans so many minutes when we should be giving development minutes to RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Emmanuel Quickly, who's been taking the league by storm, Kevin Knox? Like, these are young guys that need to find their way in the league, but that's just not Tibbs' way. That's why they just traded for Derrick Rose. They're playing Austin Rivers a ton of minutes, Julius Randle a ton of minutes. Like, they've got this little veteran movement going on within the young guys, and that's why they've won these amount of games. And I think there's a good balance with that, where he should still be playing veteran guys and have them in the rotation and, like, have them around to teach these young guys. But at the same time, you've got to throw them into the fire. And I think that the New York rookies need a little bit more of that. And it's good for New York to not be just god-awful terrible, but they could be doing better things with not as short-term of a look on things. If their goal is to make the playoffs this year, then maybe they can make the play-in and go from there and get lucky. But their focus should be long-term. And I'm not saying that it's not long-term, but it's not fully in on the future as much as it should be. But it's also hard to be fully in on the future when you've been bad for so long. So I understand where they're coming from, trying to win, trying to become at least respectable in the league. And they've done that. So good for them.
Yeah, it's also unfortunate. Again, we talk about the loss in the Zion sweepstakes, the pick that they ended up getting last year. It seems like this franchise just can't catch a break. We got 8 more teams left in the Eastern Conference, all of these currently in a playoff spot as of right now. Of course, plenty of basketball left to be played, a lot of games left to go. But let's start with the 8-seed Toronto Raptors, who are currently 11-13. I have 2 questions for you here. Number one, Pascal Siakam is a guy that I remember got a lot of hype, and I kind of bought into that a little bit. He played very excitedly his first couple of seasons, and then he kind of fell off a little bit. So my question for you here is, number one, has Siakam bounced back? Do you feel like he's gotten back to where he needs to be? And my second question is, what does this Raptors team need to add, if anything, in your opinion, to get back to a team that could potentially compete for a spot in that NBA Finals?
You know, Siakam has always been an interesting story, and I think what we saw with Siakam was kind of like a classic case of getting your expectations a little bit too high right off the bat. He is absolutely incredible. He is really, really good. But, like, he's at his best when he's playing along somebody as talented as Kawhi Leonard. You know, the roster that he was around on that championship run fit Pascal Siakam perfectly, because he is not the most refined player ever. And that's okay. He's not really supposed to be. But now, back up to 20 points per game, almost 8 rebounds a game, a good amount of assists as well. He's getting back into his groove. I don't think he's where he needs to be. I do think his peak is second best player in a championship team, like we saw it. I don't know if I would necessarily be like the most excited to have Pascal Siakam on my team, because you kind of need to have like the perfect roster around him for him to be truly effective, and that's just not this roster by any sense of the means at all. But he's better. He's not looking as bad as he did before. He's looking more put together, a little bit more skilled, a little bit more controlled, which is what you want to see out of him. And I'm not giving up on him yet. Just because he wasn't as good as he was when he had, like, the perfect roster around him, I'm not going to be like, oh, this guy's done. But at the same time, you can't sit here and be like, wow, he's back to where he was before. He was an all-NBA type player in past seasons. So it's strange because his rise was so quick and his downfall was also kind of so quick, but he's fine. He's back to around where he needs to be, but he could definitely be better.
Certainly. And again, to my other half of that question, what do you feel like this team needs to add, if anything? Again, there are plenty of avenues, but if they want to get back into contention, what is this team missing?
I think that's the question, Tyler. Not what should they add, but do they want to be in contention? I was on Koki Riley's podcast talking about this, and I'm thinking it might be time to, instead of acquire an asset, might be time to move on from some. Kyle Lowry, if he wants to, obviously it's up to him, he should have the control. If he wants to move on, I would not blame them for maybe trading a couple pieces like Kyle Lowry, some of their maybe more old players, more veteran players, and trying to buy into this youth movement. But if we are buying in just for, let's say, whatever sake, they want to keep winning, they want to keep going in, they need a big man. You know, Aaron Baines, as much as I love the guy, he's just not doing what they need to do. Chris Boucher, he's had some great minutes and short spurts, a great PER, but he's definitely more of a bench center than he is a starting center, somebody that can fill that spot. So I'd be looking for somebody that can clog up that hole. It doesn't have to be an incredible center, just somebody who's a little bit more competent or more consistent than somebody like Aaron Baines, who, again, I loved what he did in Phoenix, but this season he just doesn't look the same. He doesn't look like he can make that type of impact on the court as he did before. They've tried everything. They tried to get Alex Len, which who knows why that didn't work. they need a big man. They need a center. You know, they've got their guards, Van Fleet, Lowry. They've got Siakam, Norman Powell, OG Anunoby. Those are your 1 through 4 pretty locked up through multiple rotations, so they just need kind of that standout center that they had before in an Ibaka and a Gasol in those championship teams.
Sure, fair enough. Moving up to the 7 seed, the Atlanta Hawks are 11-12, one of the last under 500 teams currently in the playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. This team actually had one of the more interesting off seasons. I realized that there were a lot of bigger names that moved, but honestly, I was looking at this team, and look, heading into this year, they were going to have Trae Young, Clint Capella, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and of course DeAndre Hunter. Was I wrong for expecting a little bit more out of this Atlanta team with the core that they built, or do you feel like they've kind of been playing up to your expectations for them so far this season?
You should expect more, but they've also been hit with a little bit of an injury bug. Bogdan Bogdanovic is out. DeAndre Hunter and Rajon Rondo have gone through some things, so like they haven't had their full roster. But Trae Young is also kind of to be at fault throughout all of this. He had a pretty long stretch there where he was dipping and just not the same. He's back up to 26.7 points per game. Good for Trae. 9.2 assists. Capella has been putting up absolutely monster numbers for them, putting up 13 and 14. You should be expecting more, but I think you're going to get it. The team is not fully healthy. I think they will be an above 500 team. Their younger guys have taken a decent step. Cam Reddish, Kevin Huerter, John Collins. We're not really sure where his future lies, if it's with the team or if it's not with the team, but he's still able to average 17 and 8. They're good. They're going to be a little bit better than what the roster says now if they can come out to full health, get Bogdan Bogdanovic back. And I don't think you were wrong, Tyler. You definitely read the room correctly. You should be expecting a little bit more than under 500 from the Hawks this year.
All right, fair enough. Well, from a team that we are expecting more out of to a team that, honestly, I wasn't expecting a lot out of this year, that's really taken a leap. The 6-seed Charlotte Hornets, also just a shade under 500 at 12-13. My question for you here, Eric, is there hope for Charlotte? Because I remember, you know, I think it was 2 seasons ago, I was talking to Alex Weiner, who's been on the show a number of times, and he was showing me some of the contracts that this team is locked into. It was bad. Like, their contract situation was abysmal. And honestly, I love Devontae Graham, one of my all-time favorite Kansas Jayhawks, but, you know, there was always a question of, was his success going to be sustainable? Clearly, it was not to the level that it was a few seasons ago, but they've got LaMelo Ball, they've got Gordon Hayward, they're looking pretty good right now in the 6th seed. Is there hope for the future in Charlotte to build around some of the players they have right now, or is this success unsustainable?
I'm about to say a sentence or a combination of words that have never been said before, Tyler. Are you ready?
Hit me.
Brace yourself. Charlotte is fun.
Wow.
Yeah, I said it. They are. It, you know what, Tyler? It is something to look at for Charlotte, and it is something to build on. And above all else, you look at LaMelo Ball, who has been incredible. He's been electric, not only entertaining-wise, but he is continuing to get better and better and better. Stat-wise, he's brought his turnovers down, averaging 6.2 assists per game on 14 points per game. He's been able to shoot the ball decently. He is definitely somebody that you can look at and be like, wow, that might be a star for the future. Devontae Graham has had a dip this year. I think he'll be fine. Miles Bridges is a great connection with LaMelo Ball. PJ Washington has some potential as well. They've got good young pieces, but at the same time, you can't you know, discredit what somebody like Gordon Hayward has done. And a lot of people bagged on his contract. And look, you have the right to get what you negotiate. And he negotiated an incredibly large contract from this team, and a lot of people didn't think it was worth it. But he is the reason for them to be good right now, because a lot of these young guys can add and can have these great nights. But on a night-in, night-out basis, Hayward has been by far and away their best player, averaging almost 23 points per game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He's just been an all-around solid. I do think this is sustainable for Charlotte. I think they should at least be a play-in team this year. Like, I think a little bit of a drop isn't that big of a deal as long as LaMelo continues to show growth. And then as the season goes forward, Hayward can maybe be that bet while you build around your LaMelo. You build around your Devonte. You add another draft pick this year. This is something in Charlotte that I think in 3 to 4 years, if all the moves are made correctly, they could be a top 4 seed in the East. The problem is those moves have to be made correctly, which we haven't seen with Charlotte in the past. So now it's kind of time for them to bide their time, continue to grow, see what James Borrego can do. LaMelo Ball has gone from bench player to now he's in the starting lineup after a couple of injuries to some guards, and it's working out for them. It's a great thing for him, and there's only up to go from here for LaMelo, at least in my opinion. I'm really high on him, so there should be hope in Charlotte. There really should. I don't think it should be blind hope. Like, let's not say that they're going to be amazing in the next year. But if the path they take is the correct one, the smart one, there's a lot of bright spots in the future for Charlotte.
Yeah, certainly. It's just going to be a matter of putting a lot of faith in an organization that historically has not been very good about making those decisions. But yes, it'll be interesting to see what Charlotte can make out of this. I'll also be interested to see where they finish this year. You mentioned they might be a play-in team. A little bit of a drop may happen. But, you know, right now they've got a lot of momentum. Again, still very early in the season. Let's keep trekking through it. Let's get into the top five teams here in the Eastern Conference. We start with the 12-12 Indiana Pacers. Look, my question for you here is very simple. You mentioned this is a team that's been cooling off a little bit as of late. I just wanted to get your overall opinion on this new Pacers team post Victor Oladipo trade. It feels like for the last couple of seasons, the narrative has been Depo is not healthy and therefore the Pacers are going to struggle come playoff time. But right now, that's no longer an issue. They got some new pieces in that trade. So again, your thoughts on the new Pacers and kind of where this team can go from here.
It's tough because thankfully for that trade, it saved Caris LeVert's life. But at the same time, he hasn't been able to play. And I think that's really starting to wear down on some of their guys like Domantas Sabonis, Malcolm Brogdon. They're playing an insane amount of minutes per game. They're starting to tire out a little bit. I really feel like they need Caris LeVert. They need somebody else there because as Oladipo wasn't fully healthy, he still added a lot to that team on both ends, offensively and defensively, that they are gravely missing right now. They're kind of treading water until LeVert comes back, but they have some good pieces. I'm happy to see that Sabonis and Turner have found a way to work together. Malcolm Brogdon is just the definition of a solid, solid point guard. TJ Warren has only played 4 games for them. He was the bubble MVP for the regular, quote, regular season in the bubble. And without Caris LeVert, you're relying on guys like Jeremy Lamb, Justin Holiday, Doug McDermott. These aren't players that you should really be relying on a night-in, night-out basis. So they're kind of treading water until he can come back, and hopefully he can come back soon. When he does come back, if he can play like he did in Brooklyn, I don't see any reason why this team kind of can't maintain their standings. I don't think they're better than Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, or Philadelphia, but I do think that they are better than Charlotte. I think they're better than Toronto, New York, Cleveland, like those other play-in teams, and probably around the same as a fully healthy Miami Heat and Atlanta Hawks team. I think they're good, but they have a couple pieces to go, and hopefully LeVert can come in and kind of take some time and energy and effort away from Sabonis and Turner and Brogdon, who have all had amazing seasons in their own right.
Sure. Once again, because we are talking about the Eastern Conference, there are only 4 teams in the Eastern Conference with a winning record. Let's go ahead and move into these top 4 seeds. We start with the Boston Celtics, who are just treading water right now at 12-11. Look, Boston lost a couple of pieces from last year. I felt like last season's team, that roster was really, really solid. The question was always going to be, what would the new roster look like this season? What would they be able to accomplish? And look, again, I haven't watched a lot of Celtics basketball this year. I think I've caught half of one game. So again, this may be an ignorant take, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Is this Boston team simply worse than they were a season ago?
It's hard to say. Be- because part of me says no, because I look at Tatum and Brown. They're two star players, and I'm just like, wow. Like, honestly, wow. Especially from Jaylen Brown, who has taken a significant step up this year in basically every single category, is only literally 0.1 points per game away from leading this team in scoring on a team with Jason Tatum. Tatum averaging 26.8, Brown averaging 26.7. I've always been high on Jaylen Brown, and I love to see him kind of step up and get out of the shell. So, like, if you're basing it off of your best players, then they've gotten better. But at the same time, I look at somebody like Kemba Walker, only played 10 games per season, averaging 15 points per game, only 4 assists. It's not looking good for Kemba. He's not looking like he's fitting into the system. He's not looking like he could be that third player that he was trying to be before. And after having a not-so-entertaining and not-so-effective playoffs, that's kind of tough to see. As far as outside of their top three players, Smart and Tice are good. Peyton Pritchard, the rookie, he can give you some solid minutes off the bench. It seems like their biggest problems have come also with the big man rotation. Like, they signed Tristan Thompson, which is awesome. But the combination of starting Tyson Thompson is not exactly working too well. Off the bench, Jeff Teague has never met a shot that he doesn't like. I wouldn't say the roster is better than last year, but it also takes star players to win series and to win championships in this league. And so I think they might be better off trying to go deeper in the playoffs simply because Tatum and Brown have that takeover ability, and maybe that's going to be able to take so much more away from somebody like Kemba or Marcus Smart or Daniel Tice, to where in a playoff series they can become more effective. So I'd still bet on that. But overall, I would say their roster is worse than last year, but it's kind of weird. It's not too much worse, and I think their ceiling is higher.
Sure. This is not a question about a team specifically, but I do want to ask you here. So again, based on what I know about the league, what I know from last season, what I've seen in terms of looking at rosters and stats and records and whatnot, it feels like between Boston and Brooklyn, there's a little bit of a line there, and the top three teams in the Eastern Conference, at least in my opinion, are really the only three that I would trust to get to an NBA Finals this year. Is that fair to teams like Boston and Indiana, or are you kind of the same mindset that Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philly, one of those three is more than likely going to be in the NBA Finals this year?
Yeah, I think you could say more than likely one of those three, but at the same time, like, I think that Boston is really the only other team that has a chance. I think that they would definitely be grouped outside of that three, but above everybody else. So they're kind of in that weird in-between state. And who knows, maybe they can, if Kemba can go back to averaging over 20 points per game, or just be a lot more efficient and be able to be that third guy, then I would put them in that group of three above him. But until then, I agree with you.
All right. So let's talk about the top three teams that we just mentioned in the Eastern Conference. Let's start with the 14-12 Brooklyn Nets. Look, there's a very simple storyline for this team this year. James Harden. Yes, that's it. That's it. We're going to spend 20 minutes talking about that. No, I'm just kidding. James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. My question to you, and again, I've watched a little bit of it, but I haven't watched a ton of Nets basketball this year. Is it working? It's really my only question to you. Is it working?
Well, I'll answer that question second. I want to, one, say I'm all in. All in.
All right.
All in. Chips all in the table. I don't care about defense. Two, no, it's not working. No, okay. Here's the weird thing with Brooklyn. They have been really good against teams above 500 and really bad against teams under 500. And to me, that's an effort thing. And I look forward and I look to the playoffs and I see James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. And I'm like, all of those guys are going to try really hard. And two of them have won championships before. I trust them. I think they're going to be really, really good. And I think they're going to have a big man on their roster that they didn't have right now. They really just need some sort of defensive interior presence. DeAndre Jordan is just not that guy. The biggest thing he brings to the team is that he's just friends with everybody, which, good for you, man. That's like my biggest asset when we play basketball, so I can relate to that. But it's not going to help you win a championship. But I would still, honestly, in my opinion, I would choose them to go to the finals out of everybody else in the East. I just don't see how anybody can match up that star power. Like James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. The best offense of all time, the worst defense of all time, but in the playoffs, I trust them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, again, I'm looking at the other two teams. I don't really trust Milwaukee, who we'll talk about here in just a second. I don't necessarily know that Milwaukee has gotten better enough from last year to really have me put too much stock into them. And this is also a Philly team that, look, they're still kind of dealing with some of their own issues too. So I really do like this Brooklyn squad. I think it's going to be interesting down the stretch to see if it works. And obviously, you know, a lot of people question the chemistry on this team. But I, look, when you have three guys that are capable of going out and getting their own bucket like that, it's just going to be so difficult for anyone to stop. Let's go ahead and talk about the 2-seed Milwaukee Bucks, who are 16-8 right now. I've got a simple question for you with Milwaukee. The last 2 years, they've been very, very, very good in the regular season. Of course, Giannis Antetokounmpo is one of the best big men that anyone has seen in the league. Incredibly versatile, MVP caliber player. My question to you, Eric, is, has Milwaukee gotten better from last year to a point where you would feel comfortable with their ability to actually make an NBA Finals? Or are they still just going to be that team that gets to the precipice and then falls short again?
Are they better? Yes. Am I confident? No. They have a better roster. Drew Holiday is infinitely better than Eric Bledsoe. There is no denying that. Giannis is playing just as good as he had before. Middleton is actually playing a little bit better than they had before. They have shooters. They have guys that can go on the inside. They have defenders. They have a better roster. But I'm not like, oh yeah, Milwaukee, because they've proven in the past that they do not adjust, and they haven't really done it this season. They're playing the same defensive scheme Coach Bud has done before. Giannis isn't always guarding star players, and that's been a big problem with them before. Also, as great as Giannis is, his play style does not convert into the playoffs. I'm more comfortable in Drew Holiday around him than Eric Bledsoe, but it's still not, it's not deniable. Like, you have to understand that Giannis's game is a fast break game, a lot of dunking, a lot of being in the paint, and when it's the playoffs, it's a slower pace, half court sets. You don't really have that ability to drive in as much as you had before. It's easier to defend him. So, am I more confident? Yes, but I'm still not like super in love with them going to the finals. And that's funny to say, because I still think they probably have like the second best chance. It's just hard to trust Milwaukee when we've seen them falter out in playoffs before over mistakes that they could have easily fixed themselves. I think that's the problem, is that, you know, they can fix these mistakes, and a lot of it comes from coaching, but they haven't. And I don't know if they will.
Sure. I think that's more than fair. Look, I did promise you that as we got deeper into these, as we got to the higher teams, I was going to start sounding less and less stupid. I think so far I've done a good job of that. So let's talk about the number one seed right now, the Philadelphia 76ers. They're 18-7. And from what you told me, you would trust Brooklyn, then Milwaukee, and then I'm guessing Philadelphia. Look, I think it's important to note, and I know a lot of people bring this up, this is a Philadelphia team that was one ridiculous Kawhi Leonard buzzer beater away from going to the NBA Finals just a couple of years ago. Right now, they look good. Granted, a lot of those 18 wins have come against teams that are not necessarily up to snuff. My biggest question for you with Philly is this. There were a lot of questions about whether Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons were going to continue to be able to play together. A lot of issues with kind of their play styles. Embiid, especially with, you know, his lack of health in previous seasons, he's averaging 30 points a game. He is playing like an MVP. And I guess my biggest question for you overall, to kind of recap everything that I've said and then put it into one question, how much of this success, in your opinion, if any, gets put directly on the shoulders of Doc Rivers and what he has brung to the table here in Philly?
All right, Doc Rivers is a better coach than Brett Brown, and coaching has been a big improve and a big upgrade for them, but I think Doc Rivers is probably the most overrated coach in the league.
Wow.
Personally, if you look at his success in the playoffs, he's won one championship, he's blown multiple 3-1 leads, he's lost in Game 7 a bunch of times. Anyway, I think he's good. I think he's a good coach for this team. I really think that what has changed for them is Daryl Morey more than it is Doc Rivers. Because that roster change, getting Seth Curry on your team was huge for Philadelphia, because the biggest problem for why Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid could not play together were two things: shooting and ball handling. And both of those things Seth Curry brings. Is their roster perfect right now? No, but it's a lot better than where it was before, a lot better built for the playoffs around these teams, and you've seen it. They're 18-7, and Embiid has been incredible. I do think Embiid and Simmons can play together. I don't think they're the perfect match, but I do think they can play together. I do think they can win together. And Doc Rivers does deserve some credit, but at the same time, I think it's kind of a mixture of getting the roster changes, Simmons and Embiid coming more into their own, and Embiid being healthy. And overall, like, Philly's a really dangerous team, and Embiid is somebody to where I would trust him to take over a playoff series. And there's only a handful of guys that I would really trust to do that. And Embiid is one of them. So I think that a lot of their problems are fixed. Unlike Milwaukee, they have kind of gone out and changed and tweaked some things, and you can see that it's worked out. I don't think that they are by far and away the favorites in the East, but they are in a lot better of a position than they were last year, and I'm a lot more confident in their ability to go to the finals than I have been at any point in Embiid or Simmons' career so far.
All right, fair enough. Well, that wraps up our talk on the Eastern Conference. We got a whole other conference to get to, and we will go from one of the best teams in the league to one of the worst teams in the league. Let's talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves. This will be a brief discussion. I don't want to spend too much time talking about Minnesota. I do have a trivia question to hit you with, but I know you're one of the smarter guys again when it comes to your NBA history. So let me just ask you this. Since 2009-2010, do you know how many seasons Minnesota has not finished last place in their division?
Oh, in their division.
Yeah, in their division.
Oh, man. I want to go zero.
It's two, and they finished third and fourth in those seasons. So my question to you with Minnesota, and again, not trying to spend 10 minutes talking about the Timberwolves, but how the hell has Minnesota been this consistently bad for this many years? Especially with some of the pieces they've had. I know Wiggins kind of busted for him. I know Cat can't do everything. How are the Timberwolves this consistently bad?
Sometimes, man, the franchise is just cursed. I mean, we see it in every sport. There's always at least one or two franchises that just never win. No matter how hard they try, they just don't. And unfortunately for Minnesota, they're one of those teams. With this year, it sucks because they've had a ton of injury problems. D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, like their two best players, haven't played basically any games together. And that's the whole reason and the whole like emphasis you had going into the season was those two players, and they haven't done it. Other than that, they don't have a complete roster. They can't defend. It's sad. Sad times in Minnesota, but I guess they're used to it by this point.
Yeah, fair enough, especially with that track record. Also, one other thing, I'm looking at these Minnesota seasons. They've been to the playoffs once since 2004.
Yep. That was with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, and they got...
I should have guessed. I forgot that Jimmy Butler was there. I knew it wasn't zero.
Yeah, a loss in the conference round. Before that, man, I mean, again, it doesn't get much better. So, just a cursed franchise, as you mentioned. But again, let's not waste too much time talking about them. Another team I don't want to waste too much time talking about, the Oklahoma City Thunder, 10-13. Look, I think we knew last year that this team, they kind of had everything going for them to get into the position that they were in. They lose Chris Paul. They lose a couple of other key pieces. Now they're not really... They're just not the team that they were a season ago. Let me ask you really quick. Do you feel like Oklahoma City at this point, with the pieces that they have, do you feel like they're committed to blowing it up, or do you feel like this is still an OKC team that kind of wants to retool around some of the guys that they have?
I think the beautiful thing about OKC is that they can balance both, because they've traded away a ton of guys that acquired an insane amount of draft capital for the future. So it means they don't really have to worry about tanking right now, because they have some great young players. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Lou Dort, like these are people who are making significant playoff impacts last year that you could still build around this year. So, like I said, was it Toronto that I said they're stuck between rebuilding and not rebuilding, or it was kind of like Chicago, one of those teams, right? Stuck between New York, right? New York is doing a bad job of balancing between rebuilding and winning now. OKC is doing a beautiful job of that, because you want to still give responsibility to your young players and rely on them, but they also do have veterans in Al Horford and George Hill, but they're not like overly relying on them. They're still able to win, but they're second worst in the West. They're still going to be able to like get a good pick, and they have everybody else's pick as well. OKC is set up really well long term, and I think that there's a lot of pressure for them to be good and to rebuild well, because not many people have been set up to rebuild like this.
All right, fair enough. Let's keep the train moving here, working our way through the Western Conference. This is the one that I was so confused by. Because, again, I've kind of kept one eye on the NBA, but I haven't been following super closely. So in my head, everything's still going great for this team. And then I see they're third to last place in the Western Conference. The 11-14 Dallas Mavericks, what the hell is going on with this team? I understand, and again, the one thing that I do know that they have not gotten the kind of production that they expected, and even the amount of production that they got last year out of Kristaps Porzingis. But beyond that, how is Dallas down in the position that they're in right now?
A lot of it has come down to shooting. Their shooting has just been god-awful from where it was last year when they had like the best offense of all time. The roster itself, we just talked about Philadelphia, how great it was for them to bring in Seth Curry. Well, where did Seth Curry come from? He came from the Mavericks. Josh Richardson is not the best player to fit next to Luka. He's not bringing exactly what they need. Kristaps, of course, has been in and out as well. The roster is just not built as well. Luka's leading them in points, rebounds, assists, and steals, which isn't great. And their block leader is James Johnson at 0.8. It's just not looking good overall. But at the same time, like, if they start knocking down shots, if they start hitting threes, this team swings a couple wins the other way. And in the Western Conference, like, all these teams that we're about to talk about, they're very, very close. So the season is far, far, far from over for Dallas. I think their shooting is going to come back out to the mean. Luka's going to get in a little bit of better shape. They'll be fine. They're not going to be great, but they'll be better than where they are now.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm confident again in this team's ability to turn it around. I was just confused. I feel like this is the Bleacher Report. It's like the Bleacher Report. I can't even think of the word I'm looking for here. It's just when
you're saying where they post all the Luka
highlights. Right, you see 20 highlights. I mean, like, again, if you didn't know that Klay Thompson was out this year, you would assume that the Golden State Warriors were still the best team in the world and the one seed in the West. But, like, we know that. The one thing I didn't know was that, again, Dallas not really taking care of business this year, but you still see the Luka highlights all over the place. So we'll move on from Dallas here. Let's talk about the Houston Rockets, 11-13. This team, clearly not in the same position they were. A year ago, they had Westbrook, they had James Harden. Those two guys are gone. My question for you with Houston is this. They're 11-13 right now. They got Victor Oladipo. Now what? Where does this franchise go from here? Is it time to maybe try to lose some games this year and build around Depo? Is this a team they feel like they can retool and make a push here? Where is Houston right now?
It's tough because you just traded for somebody like John Wall, who has an insanely large contract, so you're committed to him. You have other veterans like Eric Gordon who are still on the books for a couple more years. Just traded for Victor Oladipo. How long are you going to keep him around? Are you going to sign him again in free agency this year? But you also just signed somebody like Christian Wood for a cheap deal, who's averaging 22-10, could make his first All-Star game this year, one of the brighter young players in the league. You've got some young guys, Jayshon Tate. I don't think they're really going for the rebuild. They just got a ton of picks from Brooklyn. It's weird. Like, they're kind of stuck between the Knicks and the Thunder, where they're like, they should be rebuilding, but they kind of can't, but they kind of have some pieces. I think they have enough to do well. I think they can make a play-in game. But if I were them, I'd be looking to trade Eric Gordon. I'd be looking to trade DeMarcus Cousins, trade PJ Tucker. I don't know if you can trade John Wall. I don't know if you can trade Victor Oladipo, but those are two guys that could be looking to be on the move again as well. I don't really see any pieces on this roster besides Christian Wood is like a wow. I want them on my team long term in the future. So they're not in a great position, but in the future they have a lot of draft capital. And they can still win now. They do have players that can help them win now and make the playoffs. So if Tillman Fertitta's broke butt wants to make the playoffs and make a little bit of money, he can do that.
Sure, fair enough. Let's go ahead and move on to the Memphis Grizzlies, the team in the NBA that I would feel pretty confident saying I know the second least about. Look, they have Ja Morant. I know that. Ja Morant has been very good. But let me just get your take on this here. It feels to me like Memphis is almost in that position. Again, they made the play-in game last year. They ended up losing in that. They don't technically make the playoffs. It feels like Ja Morant and the players that this team has are good enough to put them in a position where they're not going to get a great draft pick. I realize that the lottery exists, but does it feel to you like this team is kind of stuck in that hellish spot that you mentioned the Knicks are in earlier, where maybe it is time to lose some games and try to get a better pick and build around them, but they're going to win enough that that's just not going to be tangible for them?
I don't think hellish is the right thing to call the Grizzlies right now. I think they're fine. Ja's great. Jaw is incredible, but he's also been injured. They haven't had their second best player for the entire season in Jaren Jackson Jr. Brandon Clark continues to develop well. Valanciunas can give you 15-10. You know, they are kind of right now treading water. I think that's more because of injuries than it is because of talent. And a fully healthy team is probably around an 8-7 seed. And they can still get there this year. They play really well. They play really hard. The grit and grind is still kind of alive, but with a little bit more flair. And, you know, with the way the draft lottery is, the way the draft odds are this year, and for the foreseeable future, you don't need to be the worst team in the league to get a good pick, and they don't really need the number one overall pick. So I think they're in a good spot. Like last year, they were vying to get into the playoffs in Ja's rookie year. So I don't see why not they continue to try to win as much as possible. And when they're fully healthy, their record would look better than where they're at right now.
Sure. Let's go ahead and move on to the New Orleans Pelicans, who are 11-12. I have a question about a specific player here. I know there's a lot that we could talk about here with New Orleans, but specifically, look, let me ask you something. What do Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, and Jeremy Lin, what do those three guys have in common to you?
They all had like insanely high peaks that dominated sports for their entire life, and then they kind of disappeared.
Yes, and they were also all a part of what I like to refer to as ESPN's hype machine. Any player that gets put into ESPN's hype machine, I am inherently hesitant about, because I have seen ESPN overreact to a lot of different players. One guy that I was worried about coming into the league was Zion Williamson. Yes, he had a ton of raw talent. Yes, he was incredible at Duke. Yes, he could put up all of these flashy dunks. But for his rookie year, he couldn't stay on the floor. He had some issues with health. He couldn't stay on the floor for long amounts of minutes. He just wasn't in the right kind of condition. And honestly, I wasn't out on Zion. I thought he was going to be a fine NBA player. But I was really sitting there his rookie season, and I was thinking, I'm not sure that he's going to live up to the hype that they put him up to, but this season, that's kind of changed for me a little bit, not because of the highlight dunks, not because of any of that. It's the freaking stats that this guy is putting up. I continue to see posts from a lot of different sites, from a lot of different journalists about what Zion's doing. He is silently crushing the league this year, and when he gets a team around him, I feel like he's going to be really good. So let me just ask you this. Do you feel like Zion is living up to that ESPN hype machine that he was put into when he was back at Duke? And do you feel like he's the kind of guy that can lead this New Orleans team, if they build around him properly, to really, really great things in the next 5 or 6 years?
Yeah. Why not? He is really, really good. He's not the best player on his own team right now. That title belongs to Brandon Ingram. But he's close. And defensively, he has a long way to go. But offensively, he's averaging 23 points per game, 7 rebounds, a couple assists. He's in a good spot. This roster is terrible. It's so bad. There's zero shooting. Kind of the same at Duke. He didn't have a ton of shooting around him at Duke. So we haven't really seen him with dead-eye snipers around him. And when we do, and when he figures out where his best use is in the NBA offensively and defensively, I mean, look, the man's played like a total of only 30-something, 40 games of NBA basketball. Not even half a season, Tyler. He's so freaking good. He is so freaking good, and he is good enough to do all these things that he's been hyped up to be if he stays healthy. The roster needs to change around him. Point blank, period.
All right, fair enough. Well, it'll be interesting to see what that roster does, but clearly that is not going to happen this season. This is not a New Orleans team that's going to be making a push. Let's talk about another team that's not going to be making a push, the team currently sitting in the 9th seed. Look, I hate myself for doing this. I chose 2 summers ago to become a Sacramento Kings fan. I don't know why I did that to myself. I had several other options on the table. I had tried a couple of other options prior, but I was like, you know what? This team has a fun young core. You know, I really enjoy them. They used to be in Kansas City, so I've got the local connection there. Like, why not? I'm going to become a Kings fan. They traded Bogdan. They've got a couple of guys that just can't stay healthy and on the floor. They just still have a couple of fun young guys. But this season, I remember I watched the season opener. They got clapped by the 76ers. And I was like, I can't do this. I can't watch this team. And then I got a DM from Alec, and he goes, dude, are you watching the Kings right now? It's like, no, what are they doing? They beat the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Celtics, the Pelicans, the Raptors. And then they just completely fell apart. This team is 12-12 right now. They cannot win because they cannot play defense. Eric, I want to ask you one quick question on the Kings. I know they're a team that I quote-unquote am a fan of, but also I'm more of just a fan of the league at this point. Is this Kings team just bad? Like was that beginning stretch? Or are they going to fall so much further than where they are right now, or do you think this team can put it together?
They're not bad by any stretch of the means. De'Aaron Fox has been playing incredibly. Harrison Barnes has been playing well. Buddy Hield can play. Like they've got some pieces. Defensively, especially in the big man rotation, they're bad. I think they're a play-in tournament team. De'Aaron Fox is awesome. Like, legitimately awesome. Tyrese Halliburton, second in rookie of the year behind LaMelo Ball. Definitely the most win-now-ready rookie that we've seen this year. Has been just making incredible plays left and right, offensively, defensively, just like smart veteran plays. You know, it's hard because you don't want to get sucked into Sacramento every year. They have like a good stretch and you're like, well, they're going to be good, and then they never are. So I'm still hesitant. I'm not like, oh yeah, I'm bought in on Sacramento, but they've got pieces. They're not a bad team, but they're not a good team.
Sure. I think that's really all that needs to be said. Again, Sacramento, they've got the pieces. Will they do it? They don't usually, but, you know, maybe this year that'll change. Let's talk about the eight teams that are currently slated to be in the Western Conference playoffs. And let's start with the 13-12 Golden State Warriors. I made a joke to you earlier. I said, look, if you only watch Bleacher Report, if you only watch ESPN on Twitter, you probably think Golden State is still one of the best teams in the entire world. And you know, look, Steph has been phenomenal this year. Obviously, the people overreacting to his slow start, that was just silly. My question to you, and it's a serious one, without Klay Thompson this year, is there any chance that this team can make some noise this offseason? And also, on kind of a side note, how has James Wiseman been? I have been very curious to see what you think about that.
It's tough with this Golden State team. I do think that, you know, they do have the ability to maybe win a first-round playoff series. If Steph Curry can go nuclear, but, like, it means nuclear. Because the roster around him without Klay, it's good enough to make the playoffs, to maybe make the play-in, but it's not good enough to win a series. Steph has been incredible. I don't think he's MVP candidate status right now just because of the record of the team, but who knows? It could jump off. The Western Conference is really tight, and if Steph just has a really nice streak, and so does Draymond, and Kelly gets back to playing the way that he'd been playing last year, I think that they could, you know, not make some noise, but at least be a little bit of a problem. As far as Wiseman goes, he's definitely going to be a problem in the future. Big frame, super athletic, but right now he's just kind of doing what rookies do, and he's learning how to play the game. So he hasn't been impacting the game positively on a night-in, night-out basis, but I'm really confident in him long-term, and I do think he'll be a piece for this team for the future.
All right. Well, you kind of segue into it perfectly. Let's talk about the 7-seed Denver Nuggets. You mentioned a player who's been playing at an MVP caliber who hasn't really seen the wins come. Let's talk for a second about Nikola Jokic. 12-11, he's been playing out of his mind. My question to you is this. They have a similar squad to last year. I believe they were the 2-seed in last year's playoffs. What is kind of happened here with this Denver team? I know they've been hit with some injuries. I know they've had some problems there, but I still would expect more than 12-11 out of this team here in the opening stretch of the season, even with the injuries.
You know, you said that the team hadn't really had that much change, and unfortunately for them, that's not super true. They lost two of their most important defensive pieces from last year in Jeremy Grant and Mason Plumlee, both of them going to the Pistons. We talked about that earlier. And defensively, this team is absolutely atrocious. It's so bad. And the roster around Jokic right now is not great. You know, they need those defensive guys. And both of those guys also brought like an offensive element to their game as well. Michael Porter Jr. has not been the player that they need him to be. He wanted to be a starter. He wanted to be another star on that team. And he just hasn't done that yet. I think he can still get there, but I wouldn't be, like, relying on it if I was Denver. Nikola Jokic is incredible. I do a podcast with Carson Brebber, and he is in love with Nikola Jokic. And I don't blame him. He thinks he should be undisputedly the MVP right now. If it wasn't for the record, I'd agree. And if I'm Denver, I'm kicking myself in the butt right now, because what we've seen is that franchises that waste these incredible superstar all NBA type years from their best players with not great winning teams, they lose their players. Anthony Davis is a Laker, not a Pelican, for a reason. And they need to make changes. They need to get more defense on this roster. They need to fit Nikola Jokic better, because honestly, they're already on a short timer. Every team with a superstar that isn't good record-wise is on a timer, and they need to fill defensive pieces. Whatever they have going on right now, it is just not working. Jamal Murray has been way too inconsistent for where he needs to be. I know a lot of people thought that he could maybe replicate what he did in the bubble. and he just can't. He is an inconsistent player. It's like one half he's good, one half he's bad, one game he's good, one game he's bad, and he just needs to level out a little bit more, and the peaks are great, but at the same time, you can't just rely on getting hot for peaks. That's what J.R. Smith did for an entire career. Jamal Murray cannot be J.R. Smith. He needs to be better.
Sure, fair enough. I don't really have too much to add. I guess, and again, when you mentioned some of the players that departed, when I see that, again, as somebody who does not understand as much, again, I understand basketball very well, but as someone who hasn't studied the NBA in and out the way that some guys like you have, I didn't really see the impact of those guys leaving being as big as what it was, but clearly it has made a big difference here for Denver. Let's talk about the 6th seed San Antonio Spurs coming in at 14-11. When you look at this team on paper, this is one of the most boring basketball teams on the planet. DeMar DeRozan is awesome. They've got a lot of really good pieces. DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson, LaMarcus Aldridge, Patty Mills. This is not a team that you would expect to go out and just wipe the floor with teams sometimes the way that they do. My roommate is a Spurs fan. He kind of agrees. I mean, it's classic Popovich. So let me just ask you this. Where do you feel like the ceiling really kind of lies for this team? And is this just Popovich? Or is there a core that is not playing out of their minds or playing in a system of just guys that are really good here?
I mean, you have to give Popovich credit, but at the same time, they've got some great veterans in LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan, Rudy Gay, Patty Mills, and then they have some really nice young pieces in DeJounte Murray, Derek Wright, even Jakob Poeltl has been playing fine. Keldon Johnson is a good big body that can go out there and impact the game. As far as their ceiling goes, first round exit, they'll probably hover around the 7-10 range. As far as like the West goes, you can drop down or up rather easily. You know, I think they're fine. I think they're good. The Spurs will spur, but they don't have that superstar level player. DeRozan's great, but he's not that person who we've seen in the playoffs that can really take you far. So I think that they could be looking to move from DeRozan, could be looking to move from Aldridge and then really buy in on the youth experiment. And if they don't do it this year, then they definitely will next year. This team is not set up for the current roster to be around long term. Only about 4 or 5 or maybe 6 players are going to be there long term. And I think that's fine. I think it's time for a new era in San Antonio, and Pop seems to be handling it well.
All right, fair enough. We've got 5 teams left to get to, all of them here in the Western Conference. Let's start with the 5th seeded Portland Trailblazers, 13-10 right now. Look, Damian Lillard, one of my favorite basketball players to watch just in general. He is an absolute nightmare defensive matchup. And they've got a lot of really good pieces, but this team still does not feel like they're going to be competitive in the playoffs. So let me ask you this. What do you feel like this Portland team would need, if anything, to kind of put themselves up in that upper echelon right now with the Utah Jazz, LA Lakers, LA Clippers, potentially even Phoenix Suns? Because right now, I just feel like this is a team that's really fun. They're really flashy. I just don't see this team going anywhere really come playoff time.
Permission to speak candidly?
Yeah, sir, go for it.
They need to blow it the hell up.
All right.
Everybody but Dame. That's how I'm sitting right now.
Okay.
Let's not pretend like this is a new experiment for Portland. Dame and CJ have been there 1-2 for years. And even when they're fully healthy, which they never are, it's not good enough. It's just not. I'm sorry. It's not. And if you're Damian Lillard and you want to win, this roster is not good enough. You need to get rid of CJ McCollum. You need to get rid of Carmelo Anthony, Enes Kanter. Like you have some good pieces here, Robert Covington, Derrick Jones Jr., but it just doesn't work for the way that this is constructed. CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard can play really well together, and they can make a Western Conference Finals if everything breaks right. But what did we see when they get to those Western Conference Finals? They get destroyed. McCollum is a great basketball player, really fun to watch, is not a number two on a championship team, probably isn't a number two on a really good playoff team. I think he got lucky. And it's time for Portland to move on. But unfortunately for them, whatever Dame wants goes. And if he wants McCollum and this team to stick around, that's what's going to happen. In my opinion, if you want to win Dame, you got to move on. There is absolutely no other way. You don't have to move on from the franchise if you're committed to Portland, but the franchise has to move on from everybody else.
All right. I do. I have heard things like that before. I don't think I've heard it framed in quite that way, but I have heard, and it was always interesting to me because, again, this is a Portland team that has done a pretty solid job of getting there the last couple of years. They just haven't been able to go over the top. And I think you're right. I mean, to a degree, this is a team that, you know, they've kind of gone stale with that same combination that hasn't worked. So moving from a team that has had a combo for the last couple of years and is kind of sitting in the spot of being good enough to get there but not good enough to win, to a team that is just now arriving at that spot, at least in my opinion, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I know you've been waiting for this the entire podcast. Let's talk about your 14-9 Phoenix Suns. This is a Suns team, the Phoenix Suns, the 14-9 four seeds Phoenix Suns.
Huh.
Yeah, this is a team that, let's not sugarcoat it, this team was bad for a while. Now they are, not only are they not bad, this team is absolutely wrecking folk across the NBA. Devin Booker is doing what he does, and he's even been a little bit down this season. You add Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton is still playing out of his mind, you got Mikal Bridges. This team is good. My question to you on the Phoenix Suns, and again, I know you've got plenty you want to talk about here. Number one, how good is this Phoenix Suns team? And number two, do you agree with me that this team is still a few pieces away from being in the echelon where they can compete for a spot in the finals with the Clippers, Lakers, and Jazz? Or do you think this is a team that's ready to compete now?
I'll tell you how good I think they are, Tyler. I think that they are better than what they're playing at now. So however good you think they are now, they will be better by the end of the season.
Okay.
Do I personally think that they are a finals contender this year? No. But they're pretty damn close. And let me take a step back for a second here. They are damn close when they have a fully healthy roster. This roster, when every playable player is healthy, is dangerous. But it's when you start losing a couple of those pieces off the bench or your starting power forward is when things start to get a little bit iffy, and we've seen it get iffy this year. They've lost three straight, but at the same time, Booker, Paul, Ayton has taken a step. Like, these players are doing what winning basketball franchises do, bouncing back from games, winning shorthanded, winning close games now. Like, they have been able to bend, not break, which is something even earlier in the season they couldn't do. Like you said, Booker has not been, like, set fire to the earth Booker, and neither really is Chris Paul. And to me, that means there's another level for this team to unlock that I think they will unlock. And DeAndre Ayton went from, at the beginning of the season, pump faking a wide open, and I was about to say something bad. he pump faked a wide open free throw. I'm not even kidding. A literal wide open mid-range shot at the rim right in front of him. He could have just rolled to the rim and dunked, and he pump faked it. Now he's dunking on people. He's going into the rim. He's averaging almost 5 offensive rebounds a game, almost 14 total. And he's really good. And guess what? They haven't figured out how to get DeAndre Ayton fully involved in the offense. They haven't figured out who their full-time starter is going to be, who their full-time bench unit is going to be. Chris Paul and Devin Booker still haven't figured out exactly what type of pace they want to play at. They haven't been fully healthy for the entire season. There are so many things that this team can still improve on that I believe they will improve on, because they're tangible things that are not, like, completely out of the ordinary. Like, you're not asking Devin Booker to average 35 a game. Asking him to average maybe a couple more than he is right now, which is definitely possible. This team is really good. Really good. Really good. But they're not great. I think that they should be able to get to a second round. Like, the goal is should be a top 5 seed in the West. And then from there, the goal should be winning the first round. If you're a Phoenix Suns fan, be happy that they make the playoffs this year. Don't get your expectations too high, but at the same time, like, it's not the Suns of old. You got to hold them to a different standard. And the standard this year, top 5 seed, hopefully a first playoff round victory. I think their ceiling is they can get to the third round of the playoffs, but I don't see them being a finals team until they either add another piece or they see some more development from Ayton and Booker combined.
Sure. I think that's all more than fair.
Oh, and Mikal Bridges is beautiful. I just like to say that.
Of course. This is a very fun Suns team. And again, I could definitely see them holding on to the 4 seed right now. I do feel like, once again, similar to the Eastern Conference, there does seem to be a line between Phoenix and the top 3 seeds. But this is a fun team. This is a fun young team with a lot of really, really solid pieces. And they only have up to go from where they are right now. I have had one question for you from every single NBA team that we've talked about. We only have 3 left. The 3-seeded LA Clippers are up next. They're 17-8. This is the only one that I have a blank on. It's not because I don't know the Clippers. I know the Clippers all too well. I like this Clippers team a lot. I think this Clippers team is ridiculously talented. You look at some of the pieces they have, obviously Kawhi, Paul George. They're deep, they're strong, they're good defensively, offensively, everything. The reason I have a blank here is because I don't know what to do with the LA Clippers, because it does not matter how many good pieces they have. It doesn't matter how much momentum they have. Doesn't matter what their record is in the regular season, which is why I don't have a regular season question to ask you about here. When they get to the playoffs, they can't get it done. They've never been able to get it done. And it's just, here's the question I'm going to ask you, Eric. How am I, a new-ish fan to the NBA, supposed to watch the Clippers in the regular season? Like, again, I'm not trying to put too much stock into it because the team just has this habit of choking. And again, I realize that this is just a narrative and it could very easily be flipped. All they have to do is get it done. But they've never gotten it done. How do you watch the Clippers? And how much stock do you put into what you're seeing in the regular season with this team?
I think you could put in some stock. Obviously, you know, when you're looking at this team, you're like, you got to do it in the playoffs, you got to do it in the playoffs, you got to do it in the playoffs. What I was looking for them is intensity. I wanted them to come out and prove something. And they haven't done it as much as I wanted them to, but they still have done a decent job. Paul George is having a good season. Kawhi Leonard has continually ramped it and ramped it and ramped it up. Overall, the roster this year compared to last year is a lot better, a lot more well-rounded, a lot higher of a ceiling. So I'm more confident in them to go farther in the playoffs this year and to not have happen to them what did happen. And my co-host of the ISOPod, Carson, brought up a good point, which was the Clippers were the better team in that Denver series. And I think it's time that we start acknowledging that series as a fluke instead of everything else that the Clippers have done as a fluke. Give Denver credit and give Clippers whatever credit the opposite way. They definitely should be responsible for their loss. But at the same time, I don't think it should determine their destiny for this whole year. I agree with you. They need to prove it. And I don't trust them until they do. But I'm not super out on the Clippers. Insanely talented team. Kawhi is awesome. Paul George is awesome. And they haven't been really going all out, balls to the wall, trying to win every game so far this season. They are hiding some stuff. And I do think Ty Lue's a better coach than Doc Rivers. I do.
Wow.
Maybe I just don't like Doc Rivers.
Wow.
But I do think Ty Lue's a better coach than Doc Rivers. Now, all time, if we're talking legacy, Doc is way better. But how many championships do each of them have? Oh, they still have one. And who's won it more recently? Oh, Ty Lue. That's all I have to say.
That's fair. I won't contest you on that point because I know that I don't know the history as well as you do, and I'm not trying to look foolish. But yeah, that's an interesting take. This Clippers team, look, again, they're incredibly talented. And I feel like you would agree with me. This is a team that is capable of getting to the finals if they can play up to their potential, which, again, we have not seen almost ever. So I would love nothing more than to see the Clippers figure it out. The question remains, will they do it? And I'll continue watching them throughout the course of the regular season. We'll see if they can figure it out. Looking from the Clippers to their crosstown rivals and defending NBA champions in the LA Lakers, still really good at basketball. LeBron James and Anthony Davis, still really good at basketball. 19-6 this year. My only question to you, and again, I haven't had a chance to watch a lot of Lakers basketball this year. I've seen a lot of box scores, which I know means nothing. Have you seen any hitches or anything that would prevent them from just continuing on their run it back campaign here in 2021?
Nah, they're straight. Let's go to the next team.
All right, cool.
look, I mean, LeBron's doing LeBron things, which, you know, should be appreciated, but at the same time, it's boring to this point. AD hasn't even been playing as good as he had. They're cruising. They're on cruise control, and they're 19-6 right now. They're not putting away bad teams like they should be, but I don't think it's because they're not trying. Or maybe it is because they're not trying. They're really good. They're not playing nearly as good as they can, and they're 19-6. I feel like that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, that's fair. And again, we know what the Lakers are. I think everyone listening to this podcast knows what the Lakers are. We don't need to spend a ton of time talking about them. You know what you're going to get. So far, you've gotten it. It's a pretty open and shut case.
Their roster, same with the Clippers, is better than last year. And they won a championship. So do with that what you will.
Right. Fair enough. So let's talk about, we have one last team to talk about. This is an interesting one. I did not expect to see Utah here. I knew Utah was really good. I figured that they would be somewhere between the 3 seed to the 4 seed, maybe even the 5 seed. So far, they've got the best record in basketball, 20-5. Utah is crushing it. Donovan Mitchell continues to look incredible. Jordan Clarkson has done a great job. Mike Conley has looked good for them. My question for you with Utah is this pace sustainable, and do you actually think that Utah has any even remote possibility to finish the season as the one seed, or do you feel pretty confident that they will fall below the Lakers, the Clippers, maybe even the Suns before the end of the season?
Yes, to all of those. I mean, I think that they can end as one seed. Just because we've seen the Lakers and the Clippers not really care. And we've seen Utah, like, their three-point shooting is incredible. And if it does sustain, they can keep being the one seed. But at the same time, they could drop below the Lakers. They could drop below the Clippers, and they could drop below the Suns. That's just how the cookie crumbles when it comes to the regular season now. They are incredibly hot. As a team, their three-point shooting is nuts. And some of that might come back down to earth. Like, Royce O'Neal is shooting over 40% from three. You know who Royce O'Neal is, Tyler?
No, not a damn clue.
Then that's okay. Like, they have a lot of really good pieces. They're better than they were last year. As a team, they're playing incredibly. Donovan Mitchell isn't really playing, like, superstar-level Donovan Mitchell. Like, kind of the same with Booker, where, like, both of them aren't individually doing numbers that they did before, but their teams are doing a lot better. Jordan Clarkson is, I think, runaway sixth man of the year, just firing from three. Like, this team is dangerous. This team is Western Conference Finals dangerous, possibly, but also their first-round exit as well. Like, it's so weird with this team because I don't trust them, but at the same time, I kind of believe in them. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. There have been teams in other sports that I would say the same thing of. There have been teams in basketball that I would say the same thing of in previous years. This Utah team is very interesting, I think is the best way to put it. And again, when you rely on something as streaky as three-point shots falling all the time, unless your name is Golden State a couple of years ago, it's just not always sustainable. So, again, it'll be fascinating to see what happens with this team. I've got one last question. Go ahead.
If we're going to put it into perspective with, and maybe this was your last question and I'm stepping on it, but if we're going to put it in perspective with the Eastern Conference, where we kind of tiered finals and non-finals like teams, I think it's easily the two LA teams above everybody else, and then Utah and Phoenix, and then maybe Denver underneath, and then everybody else below that. But I think that it's definitely, without a doubt, the two LA teams and then a gap underneath that.
Sure, and that's kind of what I was trying to figure out with my line of questioning there with the Utah Jazz. I've got one more question about all of this. We've talked about all 30 NBA teams. This has been kind of a longer podcast than what I was anticipating, but I feel like I've learned a lot. Hopefully you've learned a lot as well, anyone listening to this right now. It's just kind of an information overload, but a lot of good stuff in this pod. The one last question that I wanted to ask you, at this point, we're about 25 games into the season, depending on whose record you're looking at. How many teams do you think, as of right now, if we started the playoffs today, how many teams could make the NBA Finals if they played up to their potential?
Saucy.
Well, we can get the obvious out of the way. Lakers? Absolutely. Clippers? Absolutely. Nets? Absolutely. Beyond that?
I mean, who can? Look, if we're talking, if they're hitting their peak, okay, I would say Sixers and Celtics can reach the finals. For sure, they can. In the West, if they're at their peak, like playing insane, I'm thinking like an 8% chance the Jazz can do it, and then like a 2% chance the Suns can do it, and like a 1% chance the Nuggets can do it if they can move. Like, I think that if teams play absolutely incredibly imperfectly, and maybe one of the LA teams suffers injuries, then they can do that. But it's like, I don't even know if I'd put them into the answer. Like, I think that there's a really small percentage chance, but not anywhere near like a confidence one. For me, if we're talking realistically, who has a chance of making the finals? The LA teams, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Boston. I think those are the most likely teams to make the finals. And then everybody else underneath that is a significant drop-off.
Sure, I think that's more than fair. It'll be, again, we'll keep an eye on it throughout the course of the season. I'm sure we'll have you on again before we get to the playoffs. But it's gonna be a ride. It's gonna be a ride from here to the end of the regular season. So Eric, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for giving us a little over an hour of your time. And again, a lot of good stuff here. Eric Ruby, one of the best basketball minds I know. Thank you so much for coming on the pod today.
Thanks for having me, man. Always a great time.
All right. That'll just about wrap it up for us. The NBA season rages on, and it's shaping up to be another good one. We will keep you periodically up to date on all the happenings around the league, especially come playoff time, but certainly between now and then. Want to say a big thank you to Eric Ruby for coming on the show today, and a big thank you to you for tuning in. Whether you get your podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts, we appreciate you taking a listen. The TBH Sports Pod games begin next week, so be sure to tune in for that. You won't want to miss it, but that will do it for us. For Eric Ruby, I'm Tyler Henry. Enjoy your weekend, and we will see you next time on the TBH Sports Podcast.